The Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival runs today, September 6th through the 11th, and joining us from Martha's Vineyard to discuss some of the films featured, Richard Paradise, founder and executive director of the Martha's Vineyard Film Society. Welcome back to the program, Richard.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Sean. It's great to be back.
We thought we'd have you in the studio, but with the weather and all, I thought it was best that you stay safe on Martha's Vineyard.
Greatly appreciate that. Actually, the weather is not so bad, but greatly appreciate that.
Well, we weren't sure what was going to happen, but Tim Millard made it into the studio today, and Tim's joining me here in Woods Hole. He's the feature editor and longtime film reviewer at the Cape Cod Times. Welcome back, Tim.
Thanks, Sean.
Rich, how many years you've been putting on the festival, and how do you find the films?
Well, this is the 11th year. Lucky 11, I guess you would say. And how do I find the films? Well, the films come via a variety of channels. I would love to say that I travel the world extensively year-round to find these films, but that's not the case because I'm usually here in Martha's Vineyard. But I do attend some significant film festivals and see films firsthand. Usually they're premieres, they're world premieres. Case in point, this past March, I attended the longest-running film festival in Latin America in Cartagena, Colombia, and was so inspired by some of the films that I saw there, Latin American films, that I programmed 4 films from that specific experience. So sometimes it's films that I've seen at a film festival. Sometimes it's films that were recommended to me by people who saw them at a festival like Telluride or Cannes or Berlin. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're films that I saw or have been approached by a film distributor. For instance, a small film like Rams from Iceland. This film opened very limitedly this past spring in the United States. And I was aware of it. I said, this is a perfect film for our film festival in September. And I'm just going to wait. I'm just going to hold this onto this film and this idea and wait to show it in September for our audiences at the festival.
And Tim, the Cape has several film festivals, the region does, and you attend some of these. You've gone to many festivals. How do you approach something like this? You've got lots of films to choose from, just a few days. How do you begin?
It's always a challenge. I sort of like anyone, I think I just look at the list. It's often based on my schedule, what I can make, and I try to plot it out in my mind if I'm going to spend a day at a festival. It's often based on, other than convenience, who the director is or what the subject matter is or if there's a particular actor I like or, anything like that. I know like one of the films that Richard has one of the guys from Flight of the Conchords. And so that would, that would get my interest because I like them. So, or, a movie that I, let's see, the, Madly,
yeah,
that's a combination. A series of short films, so that's
right.
Appealing. You don't often get to see movies like that. So that's one of the things about film festivals. You want to be able to do things that you're not always able to do, whether it's see short films or whether it's to see foreign films that don't make it to many places. That's one of the beauties of film festivals, I think, is or even just, I know Richard's bringing in Sharon Stone. How many times do you get to see a movie star?
Here on Martha's Vineyard, we see them all the time.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
So the festival opens with the film Madly, as Tim referenced, and that's a feature-length film comprised of multiple shorter films.
Right. That is something. Well, it's an analogy of a film short segments by 6 different international directors. Some of these directors are well known. One in particular is actually best known as a actor, Gael Garcia Bernal, best known as an actor, Mexican, but also popular in U.S. films. And he's directing one of the segments. Madly is about love, about obsession, It's these directors' sort of perspective on that subject. And so that's the common thread that binds the segments. So it's a little different than seeing, say, for instance, our international short film juried competition, where they're all short films, but they're, the themes, the subjects, the plots are all different. You know, there's no common thread, whereas in Madly, you have that common thread. Also, that film that Tim was mentioning, with the Flight of the Condor actor, that's called People, Places, Things. People, Places, Things, a comedy. And it's actually the only film in our festival that takes place in the United States.
Oh.
Out of 20 programs. It's based in New York. It's a comedy. And in any case, people should look out for that. But
Let's talk about the shorts for a moment. You know, feature-length films are the norm, of course, in the United States. Mm-hmm. And outside of major cities, it's not often that theaters even offer short films. So do shorts have a market outside of film festivals? And for either of you, maybe Tim, since I'm looking at you, maybe start with you.
Well, I mean, you don't see very many.
No.
You know, one thing that's in recent years, I've noticed that some of the art houses have shown the Oscar nominated shorts. Like somebody came up with a very intelligent idea of packaging the nominated short films and then playing them theatrically. And that's great. But it's very rare. And, you know, it's sort of like short stories versus novels. I mean, right. it's somewhat of a different art form, but it's fun to see those films, and they're just as rewarding.
And Richard, why don't you tell us about some of the shorts you have screening this year? It's quite an eclectic group.
Yes. Well, we start actually in January with soliciting for short films from around the world. And we use an online platform for submissions. And this year we had just about 300 submissions.
Wow.
For our preview committee. We have a committee of four individuals that looks at each film and gives it a numerical rating based on a variety of criteria. And then from that grouping, we take the top 10 rated films. And that's where we come up with our showcase. And so the showcase, the films are, you know, usually from young, relatively young filmmakers, first-time filmmakers. Though in this collection, we have, for instance, we have Sharon Stone producing a short film with a director, Price Arana is her name, and it's called An Undeniable Voice. And so part of the reason that I have to give out the secret, that part of the reason why we're able to, invite Sharon was not just for the humanitarian award that we're going to give her, which is so well-deserved for her work around the world for so many charitable causes, but because she's also a producer for this short film, and she wanted to support the director and the film. So that's another reason for her attendance at the festival. But we also have Matthew Modine, who's a well-known actor. He directed one of our short films that will be in the program on Saturday. It's called Super Sex. It's a very interesting title. Mm-hmm. And it also stars Ed Asner. So here you have a short film, and most short films usually have pretty unknown actors, usually. In most film festivals, short films are usually kind of the starting point of a filmmaker's career. So usually they're not able to, convince well-known actors to participate. But in the case of Matthew Modine, because he's an industry figure already, he was able to convince a number of well-known actors to be in his short film. So the collection is diverse. It's got some comedy. It's got some drama. It's got one documentary. No animation this year, but sometimes we have animation that has been, highly ranked and rated and is part of our festival.
Speaking of Americans, there are at least two films that feature American actors. The Italian-made Mia Madre stars John Turturro, right? And the American musician Usher has a role in the Argentinian film The Tenth Man. Maybe you could talk a little about those, or maybe you want to talk about how common it is to have Americans featured in foreign films.
Hmm. Well, Tim, I don't know if you want to comment first. I think John Turturro is sort of an anomaly in that he does work in Italy quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, he actually made a documentary on Naples. And I think he's got a family, you know, sort of history to Naples. And he did a whole beautifully done documentary on Naples, its culture, its music specifically, and it's in Italian. And so he speaks, you know, wonderful Italian. So he has worked in Italy because of his, you know, his family heritage background. But maybe Tim can comment on some of the other actors that work in Europe.
Well, as far as Turturro, though, he's also, I've actually had the opportunity to interview him years ago, and he's a student of film. And so it doesn't surprise me that he, like, I remember him talking about, I could be mispronouncing this name, which is horrible since I'm half Italian, but I think it's Visconti, he really knew his stuff when he would talk about the history of international film. So for someone like that, I'm certainly not surprised that that he would be in a foreign film. You know, I think it's from time to time you'll see somebody in a I remember Elliot Gould being in a Ingmar Bergman movie once. It happens from time to time. It's not a big commercial opportunity usually, except maybe the filmmaker might be excited to get a big star to get a little more attention. But I think those are probably more labors of love for the actor.
Right. Let's talk about The Wave. Now, this is a film from Norway, but the premise sounds like a Hollywood disaster blockbuster. So this an impending tsunami and a rush to get out of the way. So what makes this film different from a version that might be made in Hollywood?
Well, you know, first budget.
Yeah.
You know, a Hollywood disaster movie might be $100 million plus budget, whereas this, I think this is less dependent on, computer generated graphics and things happening sort of physically around the characters, as opposed to what's happening within the characters and how the characters deal with the, the crisis at hand, and how they deal with each other. There was another film a couple of years ago that we played at our film festival, you know, which entailed a avalanche coming down onto a resort. And at least the perception was this avalanche was coming down on a resort and how people reacted to that. Like, for instance, a father running from and leaving his family behind to save himself. I mean, that was a reaction to that. And then that was discussed aftermath through the film. So I think this film differs in that it's less dependent on, you know, the actual physical occurrence of the tsunami, as opposed to what's going on as people plan their escape or try to figure out what they're going to do, because the premise is they have 10 minutes. That's all they have, warning. And so, so that's one of, I think, primary differences between this new take on a disaster film coming from a Norwegian filmmaker. And it's quite creative in how this tsunami is created. It's not what you might expect or what you originally think of a tsunami.
Another film at this year's festival generating some attention is The Innocents. It's a Polish film, this is a post-World War II Poland. And Tim, I know you saw this film as well. Tell us about
it. Yeah, I saw it actually last night. What a great movie. It's definitely one of the best movies I've seen this year. It played also in Provincetown. I'm not sure if it played on Nantucket or not, but it's set in 1945 Poland in a convent, and not to give too much away, a group of nuns they were raped by Russian soldiers, and they're dealing with the after effects of that. It sounds like, well, it is horrific, of course, but it sounds like watching this movie would be an ordeal. It isn't. It's very life affirming and so well made, and just I loved it. I just love that movie, and that's again one of the beauties of a film festival. I think is that. I think that this movie will get some play. I think it's coming to the Cape Cinema in a week or two. So it will get around. But, film festivals give movies like this attention that they might not otherwise get. I highly recommend if anyone has a chance to see this movie at the festival, they grab that opportunity.
The Innocents. And Richard, is this film based on true events?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know specifically if it's based on a specific event, though, of course, this horrific kind of, situation probably has happened, did happen, does happen, not just in World War II, but, you know, in most war situations. But I don't have an answer for you.
Tim?
I don't know if it specifically is recounting. I don't remember seeing that anywhere in the film that it was based on a true story.
It sort of is. There's a French Red Cross worker who helps the nuns, and that is based on a real. She is based on a real person, and. In really tiny letters at the end of the movie, it says something, and I don't even speak French, but I kind of figured out, oh, wait, I think that's saying that it's based on this person. So I looked her up afterwards. And so it's based on, there really was a person who did this type of work. The story itself is more or less made up, but sort of based on the types of things that she was doing during the war. She was actually, worked with the French underground and did a lot of Red Cross work and that type of thing. It sure rings true. It's a great film.
Right. Oh, it's beautifully shot. I mean, the photography, cinematography is beautiful. And
yep.
It kind of reminds me a little of a movie, another Polish film for a couple of years ago called Ida.
Yeah, I had the same reaction, Richard.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Of course, both films featured, nuns,
yep.
And both shot in Poland. And even though this has a little bit of color in it, it very much uses its black and white contrast effectively.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In any case, that's, again, as you said, Sean, festivals really provide a platform for smaller films, especially foreign language films. Unfortunately, the United States, as a market of consumers of film, are not consuming, not as aggressively consuming foreign language films as they once did back in the 1970s. I think that's sort of the golden age. The 60s and 70s, when you had all these foreign imports coming to the United States, and they would play for months in theaters, but I guess you could say that for about any film. They would play for months and months. Nowadays, they play for a week or two at most. Festivals are really become the platform for smaller foreign language films. We have a film called The President from the country of Georgia. And it's not often that you see a very highly done, high production valued film coming from a small country, and this is a beautifully shot film also, with a lovely story.
Richard, we have just a few minutes left here, but so I want to ask you about comedies, just in case anyone's in the mood for a comedy. Anything to recommend?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, there are several, I believe, I would consider comedy, though some films have comic elements to them, but they're more dramatic in nature. Mm-hmm. But the film People, Places, Things is a comedy. Rams is a comedy, though I should warn you, it's more Scandinavian comedy. So if people have watched Scandinavian films, they know what I mean by that. A very dry comic element throughout the movie. We also have Madly, which, of course, has several segments, some of which are more serious than others, a couple that are very comic in nature. Also, Afermin, A-F-E-R-I-M, is a kind of a period piece. It takes place in 19th century Romania, but also has a comic element to it running throughout the film. So, there's comedies and there's dramas with some comic elements to them.
How about the younger set? Anything for younger people?
Yes. Well, I would say if you're someone, between the ages of 20 and 40, if that's what you mean by younger, or are you meaning children, kids?
Well, I was leaning more towards the younger children, if not.
We don't really have films that are specifically are programmed for kids, kids like 8 years old, 10 years old. There are a couple films that I would say would be okay and appropriate for a smaller child. There's a movie, a beautiful Italian film called The Wonders, which is about a family of beekeepers in Tuscany and dealing with the onslaught of changes to their way of life. I mean, it sounds a little bit like Martha's Vineyard, maybe, 50 years ago or whatever. But The Wonders is a beautiful family drama. Could certainly a child of 10, 11, or 12 could appreciate it. But no, we don't have a kids program. I mean, our mm-hmm. films are mostly in the evenings. And the festival is definitely geared towards more adults. Now, for 20 to 40 years old, I say, hey, go back to the movies and see movies in the theater. Don't watch them on your iPad or computer or iPhone and really come to a festival and experience it. I think any festival, film festival, is multi-generational. And having a mixture of young and older people seeing the films together is a pure pleasure. And I would encourage people more on the younger side, to give it a try. I think they'll quite enjoy these films and art films. Yeah. Foreign language films are not just for, old people.
Well,
amen to that.
And we're going to leave it at that. The Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival runs September 6th through the 11th, and we'll have a link to the film schedule at our website, capeandislands.org. Rich Paradise, founder and executive director of the Martha's Vineyard Film Society, and Tim Miller, features editor at the Cape Cod Times. Thank you both.
Thank you, Sean.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Tim, for participating.
Oh,
and
sure.
Sean, thank
it's
you.
Fun.
My pleasure.